I'm writing a hockey abstract right now with ECW Press.
Okay.
The realities, though, of the publishing and marketing and, you know, chapters making their orders and everything is it's not actually going to hit the shelves until next year. I'm writing it now.
Right.
It's not going to be out till next year. So just to keep you fresh and up to date, I'm going to have an electronic PDF available at the usual time, August 1st or so.
Okay.
You can download. It's going to have updated charts, updated stats, quality starts, league translations, whatever you're interested in from the previous books. Nothing, no new material, but just updates on everything that you've seen from either of the first two books.
And it doesn't affect the website. The website is there constantly. It's not going anywhere. Never. It, I was going to say it never changes. It always changes. It's always being updated is what I mean to say. But it's there. It's your analytics friend 24/7 there on the web.
Yeah, the latest update is I updated a lot of this free spreadsheet. You can go and hockeyabstract.com, click on statistics. There's just a bunch of broad data in spreadsheets. And I just made sure they were all up to date with this season's data. You know, the quality starts, passes, and goals versus salary and so on. So if you want the raw data to play with in a spreadsheet, download it.
So, because I'm a big printing guy, how many pages if I printed that?
The upcoming update that's coming?
No. The raw data.
The raw data. Oh, I have no idea.
That intrigues me. You wrote a timely, and I think it's a lot of fun, but it's a really good piece on ESPN.com today. Title is Taves and Kane Complement Each Other Perfectly. It, you know, this used to be a line league, right? You had the production line, you know, you had the kid line or whatever. Now I think we do spend a lot of time talking about pairs, don't we? And when you do that, there's a lot of really good pairs around the league, but is there a better pair than Taves and Kane?
Well, I mean, you can make a case for Crosby Malkin in Pittsburgh, obviously. But really what makes Taves and Kane so exciting is that in most cases, if a team has two superstars, take for instance the Anaheim Ducks, the team they just beat.
Right.
Getzlaff and Perry. What do? They put them together, right? Or in Vancouver, obviously the Sedin twins play together and so on and so forth. What Chicago did starting 6-7 years ago when Joel Quenneville took over, he saw he had these two incredible players. He said, rather than put them together, I'm going to mold one into an offensive superstar, that's Patrick Kane, and the other into the league's best shutdown center and build lines around them separately. And when I change your question to be like, is there a better pairing in that sense? Is there a better duo in that sense? Definitely, I think not.
See, that to me is really interesting because it's not my intention to insult anybody, but I believe if you don't watch the Blackhawks all the time, it's easy to forget they don't play together, right? And then you go, oh, they're being reunited. What do you mean they're being reunited? Because I don't watch them all the time.
Right.
But to your point, you're absolutely right. I mean, Getzlaff and Perry play together.
Right.
Crosby and Malkin, not so much, but they get paired back.
Well, they're the same position, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. But they will put them together. They have at times. But it's a good point you raise about, you know, you're right. The Sedins are constants. Getzlaff and Perry, constants. These guys aren't necessarily constants, although they were towards the end of the last series, right?
Yeah, well, that also is another, I guess you could say, arrow in Quenneville's quiver.
Right.
Is being able to put them together like that. Whereas, you know, that's what Anaheim's already doing. That's what Vancouver's doing. So, yeah.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers here, because you broke it down. You got a lot of, you know, traditional statistics, which we can start with, and you look at these two guys, and maybe one of the scariest thing to me is, you know, for two guys that, as you point out, aren't necessarily playing together a lot, their numbers are pretty close, aren't they? Like, aren't they consistent? Like, you look, it's at least some of the traditional stats.
Yeah, in terms of the traditional scoring stats, they are very close. Kane, however, because he has the freedom to basically focus entirely on scoring and not worry so much about defensive play or possession or killing penalties like Taves does, he is a better scorer at even strength. He is a much better scorer on the power play. Taves is okay, but Kane is you know, one of the league's best with the man advantage. And they're both really good on the shootout. I mean, they're both, I think, among the league's best on the shootout. But I guess you could say Taves is basically as good offensively as you can be while still being a shutdown player. Whereas Kane is just flat out a great offensive player by any standard.
And that's where it really begins to show itself in kind of the analytics compartment. You look at things like, you know, who drives possession better?
Well, Taves is one of the best possession-driving players in the entire NHL.
Right.
Whereas Kane is, he's so-so. It's not really what he's he's there for.
Okay. What about quality of competition? I'm assuming because they split them up, is one getting better competition to play against than the other?
Yeah, the last 2 years especially, Taves is really taking on one of the toughest assignments in the league among centers. Think Patrice Bergeron of Boston as an example, or Ryan Kesler in Anaheim, right?
Yeah.
Whereas that allows Kane never has to see a Crosby or a Malkin. He never has to see a Sedin. He never has to see a Perrier Getzlaf because he's more out there against, the other shutdown lines or the other checking lines in the league where you don't have to worry so much about back-checking and defensive player. And again, he does get to play more in the offensive zone. About 70% of his non-neutral shifts, Kane plays in the offensive zone, which is one of the highest rates in the league.
Right.
Whereas Taves is a little bit closer to 50-50, or as close to 50-50 as you can be on a team like Chicago.
So let me ask you a little bit about Taves in quality of competition, because and help me out. I'm trying to make an example here. Now, we're not talking about pairs, but I'm talking about lines. Let's say, the Hudler, Monahan, Goudreau line here in Calgary saw pretty good competition because the competition went out to shut them down. Is Taves seeing competition because they're trying to shut him down, or is he seeing better competition because he's trying to shut them down? You know what I mean?
The second thing. Whenever Chicago is going somewhere, Taves is definitely the man. Quenneville tries to get on the ice, and Hossa, right, try to get on the ice against, in Anaheim's case, it would have been against Perry and Getzlaf.
Right.
And then, earlier in the series, it would have been, Kane is more facing, I guess you could say, the checking lines. Like in Calgary's case, he'd be facing Michael Ferland and so on.
Right.
Whereas Taves would be facing Goudreau and Monahan and Hudler.
In your article at ESPN.com, you do talk about player usage, which is right up your alley, player usage charts. Tell me a little bit about how those look for these two players.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons I like the player usage chart is because, when you listen to me talk or when you read words, sometimes it doesn't really connect, whereas the chart actually lets you see with your own eyes where the players are. And on a player usage chart, you see Jonathan Taves right at the top of the chart in the middle, which you can call it sort of the Team Canada chart, because the last Olympic Team Canada, they picked guys exclusively at the top of the chart in middle, which means they weren't offensive guys, they weren't defensive guys, they were both.
Yeah.
And they all took on top lines and top lines only. So that's where you see Jonathan Taves, top of the chart in the middle with a big gray circle, which means that Chicago dominates possession when he's on the ice.
Except for the lockout shortened season, right?
Yeah, that was interesting. The lockout shortened season, they experimented a bit. They're used comparably, and Taves was, again, not facing the absolute top competition. He was sharing those responsibilities with Kane and with others, and he did very well. He won the Selke, which is kind of ironic because that was the 1 year he wasn't getting the back-crushing tough minutes. But because of that, he looked a lot better.
Yeah, well, there's that optic again, right?
Yeah, and he won the Selke. And then Kane also had a great year. They won the Cup. They're dominant all year. You might ask, well, why did they stop doing that if they were so dominant? And I think, Chicago's a team that's really focused on possession.
Right.
They're pretty much the number one poster child for possession in today's NHL, like Detroit used to be, right? And Patrick Kane was just getting bombed possession-wise, which is odd when you're on that good a team. And so that's why Quenneville put him back in the offensive zone, back against secondary competition, which meant that Taves had to take on the tough competition in both zones.
You know, we're talking about these guys because they come into the league roughly the same time. And we're talking about the fact that they have been split up a majority of the time. They get put back together. What about their wing? I mean, have they had consistent wingers? Have they had consistent players? Or again, are they, are we proving that both make those around them better?
That's a good point. I mean, how do you separate Marian Hossa from Jonathan Taves? I mean, Hossa is an incredible talent in his own right. I believe this is the fifth time in the last 8 years he's been in the Stanley Cup.
Yes, this will be the fifth time in the last 8 years. That's right.
Yeah, I remember I looked this up too. In that time frame, his teams have won 19 playoff series and going for 20,
right,
whereas all of Canada's teams combined during that time have won 13. So Hossa by himself has had more playoff success than all of Canada combined by some margin. So I don't know, how do you separate Hossa from Taves, or how do you separate Patrick Sharp from Patrick Kane?
Right.
Well, this year it's a little bit easier because I think Sharp is starting to slow down a little bit with his age. Hossa's not.
Nope.
Which is odd. But their other winger on both lines hasn't been that consistent.
No, it hasn't, right?
I mean, Chris Versteeg, Brandon Saad, whoever.
Yeah. Not finally, but kind of a thought I need to ask you about, though, is you know, part of analytics and part of the reason that, you know, teams are buying in and have been buying in now is because of decision making.
Right.
There's a cap component to this. Both of these guys have an amazing, we finally breached that threshold of double digit cap hits with these guys this year. Are they worth it?
Yeah, their cap hit is going up next year big time. It's going up to, I believe, $21 million or so.
For the two.
For the two.
Yep.
They have the same agent. They negotiated the same deal.
Yep.
It was $13 million this year. It's going up to $21 million, which is about 30% of the team's cap, depending on what the cap space is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge to fit that. And they're 27 now, and they're going to get paid this combined $21 million all the way until they're 34. Now, on a case-by-case basis, it's hard to tell who can keep it up and who can't. But as far as putting that in numbers... there is a stat. In fact, I introduced it about 5 or 6 years ago. It's called goals versus salary. And it's an attempt to actually convert a player's overall value in terms of goals scored and prevented, basically mm-hmm. their bottom line mm-hmm. on the team's goal differential, relative to what you could do with the exact same cap space. So if you took the exact same $21 million and you went out and got something else, goalies, defensemen, maybe you got 5 or 6 players, maybe you got just a different two, whatever.
Mm.
And by that metric, their current salaries, the great bargains. They each helped the team several goals this season in terms of goal differential.
Right.
But with this new contract, they're both about even, maybe even a little underwater, a goal or two underwater, which means they're getting absolutely full top dollar. They're not discounts by any stretch. They're great players.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So you pay what you want
yeah, yeah.
for good players. But if at 27, they're not going to get better. If at 27, they're getting full absolute value, and they're probably not going to get any better. This is as good right. as a hockey player gets.
Right.
Then when they're 34, they can only be worse. And then what about injuries? What about age? What about other factors? Unless the cap skyrockets, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in a few years when these two players start to slow down.
That's the amazing part, right? I mean, because today, you know, in Chicago, you'd feel great. Why wouldn't you give them the money? They're everything. But it's that, you know, 4 or 5 years that nobody knows. What is it going to be? I mean, we talked about Marian Hossa. Maybe they're like Marian Hossa. Maybe they don't fall off.
Right.
Maybe they're productive till 34. We don't know. But there's been no shortage of guys that fall off a cliff at 30 or 31 or even 28 or 9. I don't think it happens to these guys. But your point's a good one. What will we be saying in, you know, 4 or 5 years about those deals?
Now, the safest model has always been to have a young team. When you have the protection of RFA and yeah. entry-level contacts, tracks, it keeps player salaries artificially lower.
Right.
But the players are just as good. They peak around 24 or 25 NHL players on average. Again, different on case-by-case basis. So basically, by the time a player reaches 27 and free agency, by definition, they're getting paid the most, but they've already peaked.
I love this Thunder and Lightning. Best Thunder and Lightning in the National Hockey League right now?
I don't know who you'd rather have, Kane and Taves or... I don't know, Crosby, Malkin, Tarasenko, Backes, there's a few.
Yeah.
Kessler, Getzlaf, there's a few of these around the league.
I just think right now, in the moment, this date in history, it's hard to pick against these two guys.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. Taves and Kane.
You're the man. Lots of big things going on. Do you want to talk about where you're going? Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. I'm going to Manchester.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. Before we go, tell us a little bit about going over there.
Well, there's a big conference called... Sports Analytics Conference. It's in Manchester, England.
That's an original title.
Yeah. It's in Manchester, England. It's obviously they focus on a lot of other sports, obviously ice hockey, and they do call it ice hockey.
Yeah.
Is a bit of a footnote, but still it's a tremendous honor for me to be there. I'm going to be speaking. I'm going to be on a panel. They've ordered a bunch of my books. I'm very excited to be going. It's a thrill, and I go right after the draft. And so, it's going to be very action packed time. You got the draft, then I'll be in Manchester. Then you got free agent day. It's going to be busy times.
It's a far cry from a year ago when we were in downtown Edmonton and I was staring at you with my eyes crossed trying to figure out what the hell was going on. You've come a long way, my friend. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, anytime.